And obviously, doing a 5-year is the cheapest way. It saves, you know, over $100 a year, basically doing it that way, so.
And that was going to be the staff recommendation to you as board members, is that we would pursue the 5-year option, just to save the money. We didn't feel like there was any advantage or disadvantage, or, well, there is a disadvantage. We didn't feel like there was any advantage to paying annual installments, because we can't be without it. So we felt like the opportunity to save a few hundred dollars, or, yeah, a couple hundred bucks, going a 5-year plan was going to be our recommendation to you, so.
Yeah, and if you have the load balancer, then they require that you have the one, or the instant replacement and the energizer updates. So if you have one, you have to have those as well. And Marco, the company, is the reseller. It's cheaper to go through Marco than it was to go through Barracuda. So they gave us the information, because that's who John originally went through. The Geocom was Marco. So we have until October 23rd to renew that.
Thank you. Anybody have any questions on a load balancer?
You don't think it'll get cheaper as technology comes around, or is this finance?
I think this particular one probably could get cheaper, but what will likely happen with this kind of stuff is it'll get cheaper, but there will be something new technology that comes on the market that becomes part of their new package. So then we have that decision of how far do we want to go with something that's being obsoleted out, and
hardware will get cheaper and software will go up.
Very, very likely. And one thing we didn't find out, I guess, is what the expected life expectancy of a load balancer is. But would think we would be, if we enter a five-year service contract, we're good for that. Well, if you schedule another meeting, I guess, prior to that date, we can put it back on the agenda. Otherwise, we will probably just make a staff decision and renew it for 5 years.
Yeah, I would think that's where we'll have to head. We don't want to go without.
Next item is the
strategic plan.
I want to start the conversation prior to budget in hopes that we can have some idea. Kenny, did you get one?
Yes.
You need another one? So that we can have some idea when we prepare the budget and ultimately you're asked to approve a budget of where we're going, what we need to be working on. Obviously, I want to start the statement with this is draft form. So the reason you're seeing it tonight is I would like your input on that document. If there's other things that you think need to be added to it or wording changes, please advise and let me know. But again, I would like to finalize this document and get it out to everybody in hopes that we can have some results back prior to putting the budget together. What the thought is that if the board can identify, get information, collect information, and come up with, say, a 5-year plan, we can then present a budget to you based on carrying out these projects that are identified in the plan. So that way everybody is kind of in sync as far as what we're doing with the funding. And I guess getting input from everybody that way, rather than just a few of us.
We attended the first NET meeting yesterday as well for the region, and they've got a lot of great ideas as they move forward too, and it'd be nice to shove those out to the small departments. And that's the whole key with the broadband opportunity that the federal government, so this is a good opportunity to let us know what you need in the small communities.
We don't, today we can't sit here and know what the status is going to be of the $100,000 carryover grant going forward. But what we can tell you is it's in play for this year. And I know, Martha, you're going to need a recorder, correct?
I've got that quote from Jeff Gates.
Okay. So I'm not so worried about, I guess, want to make sure we don't leave, if we're eligible for $200,000 this year, I want to make sure we don't leave any money on the table.
Don't leave it there, yeah, that we're using it.
But I think we need to have some information that hopefully we can get from this, so if that carryover grant stays into effect next year, and there's another $200,000 that's available to us, that we've got some projects identified that we can put that money to use.
Have you talked to Michael about our need for the SBC? Each PSAP's going to need one, and if I understood correctly, that's going to cost, which is a small amount, basically, at minimum probably $12,000 a piece.
Okay.
What is that?
It is a session border controller, and it's to make us so that we, when this text to 911 comes down, so we'll be able to receive all of that.
Do you have any idea from the conversation with him? Is that something that we, if we have grant money this year? I guess in my mind, it would be nice if we can wrap up the 911 upgrade this year using the grant funds so that next year we don't have something else hanging out there. That would be the way to go, so.
And that shouldn't be a problem. I haven't gotten a quote from him yet. I know from our conversation this morning, he was on the road, and so we talked about this last week, I think, when he was down about the problem out of the PSAP.
Well, I'm not going to belabor this. You folks can read, but I am open to your suggestions. Just understand that if it takes you an hour to fill this out, and I don't think it'll take you that long, that information, when it comes back, is going to be very valuable to us to put it back in front of you for approval. And it's not my intention for the three of us as staff to pick the projects. We're simply going to gather the results, score the projects, give it to you, and you as board members can say, we want to do this project, and this project this year, these next year, whatever, but you're going to drive the bus. But that way we can then put a budget proposal in front of you based on those projects. So we really need, this is redundant, we really need to know what the needs are that are out there. My intention is when we get to a point where this is a finalized document and no longer in draft, I would do it in an electronic form, fillable form, so that we could send it out electronically and then get it back and score them electronically rather than having a big stack of paper. Anybody have any questions on this or anything that jumps off the page at them? I ran it by Chief Lasada this morning, and he had a couple things. It was just one of those things where having a different set of eyes look at something and read it. He had a couple things, and I've already corrected them, clarified them. I guess since you're not able to take action tonight, what I'll probably do is send it out electronically to everybody in draft form. Give them 10 to 20 days for comment, and then we'll finalize it and get going so that you can get it back and then fill it out so we have it in time for budget. Does that rub anybody the wrong way? Does that make sense? Does this feel like a direction that you want to go? Marcia's made it very clear that she wanted board involvement in what's going on in the department, and I struggled with how do we develop a budget that is basically just us sitting in a room developing and then we ask you to approve it. That's not really the right way to do it. We need input from you folks so that we can make make it better here. And with the legislative change last year that expanded the use of the funding, this is a prime time to do this. Am I missing anything?
Nope. No.
Regarding this year's carryover grant, Martha, when do you anticipate being ready to do a application?
I've got one started.
Okay. Well, we will probably get those going. We'll have a conversation with Michael about the controllers. Go from there.
Yeah, so we certainly want to. It's a project that has to be done by June, so.
Okay. Updates from staff. Talked to you briefly in the past about the fact that we did not have any sort of, well, our method of tracking the signs that are out there and the maintenance and such on those is basically a legal pad. There is an app that's available for free that will seem to work with the existing GIS software that the county is already using. We can probably transition to using an electronic app, basically an iPad or a tablet, for Terry to use as he's working on these signs, so it would actually place it on a map. Probably going to be for simply the cost of the tablet, and we've already got one. So my anticipation is, after I went to Ames a couple weeks ago and they did a demonstration for us, saw how it worked, talked to everybody that was using it, and they're not having any problems. They've got 12,000 plus signs already put in 2 years, and they've not had any crashes. Seems very usable. So my anticipation is sometime in the next 6 months, possibly, if we can get the GIS coordinated with it.
That's online, right?
Yeah. Okay. We could actually transition away from all of our records being on a legal pad to actually being electronic, and then we can show you a map of where all the signs are. That's part of our issue right now, is we don't even know how many signs we have. We know the number of address points that we have, and we have an approximate number of intersections. So when you add those two together, somewhere around 11 or 12,000 signs. But that's a guess. So one of the other things that's been brought to our attention, and we've noticed and documented some examples of, are single driveways with multiple address markers. We actually found one 2 weeks ago that has a total of 6 addresses on a single driveway, 4 on one side of the driveway, 2 on the other, and the on the side with 4, they've been hit by a snowplow and they've actually been pushed together and are pushed over. So completely unreadable even in the daytime. What I want to do is work with Terry and do some mock-ups and then do some testing at night, and then actually put it out to you folks and put it out to the responders to see what is, in what configuration of these signs are they more legible at night, and what makes sense to people, so that we can start cleaning up some of this stuff. The other thing that's going to come along with that is, it's been standard practice here that any driveway with three or more addresses, the driveway itself needed to be a private road, thus given a private drive name. Well, obviously, we just talked about a driveway with 6 that's not named a private drive, so we haven't been enforcing that. So we're going to need some direction as far as how we're going to handle that going forward.
So, because I live on one of those roads, uh-huh. Is this going to change our address?
No. I'm simply talking about, we've got some address markers that are, I call them like a flag, where they're horizontal, and then we've got some of the older ones that are vertical. Where it gets really confusing is, On some of the vertical ones, they're stacked, where it looks like you have a stack of eight numbers instead of two sides. There's no separation. So at night, when you pull up with your headlights on them, it looks like eight numbers, and it just...
I think you were asking if we were gonna start naming those roads, weren't you?
Yeah, the ones that have three or more, right, we're gonna change any...
I don't see how we can do that.
Well, I think it's if, like, I know this was off of T-14. It's down 223rd, and like, it was like the 13th house, honest to God. And when somebody else then built, we're like, whoa, no more addresses on there. So if you were on a road where possibly there's gonna be more houses built, then it would be, no more. But if you're...
I think we would have to do a grandfather. I guess my personal thought and recommendation to you would be that we grandfather in everything to this point, and then going forward, anything more than three would require a private drive.
Unless they're on a drive that there happens to then start up being development, and then I guess we'd have to, if there's new development, we'd have to look at it.
So my intention is to work with Terry and create a couple mock-ups where we can bring in and show you folks, and so you can make a decision on which way how the signs are gonna look going forward. We're all over the board a little bit, inconsistent, and I think that needs to be cleaned up. We have the Geocom GIS alignment project going on. Conference call we had with them a couple weeks ago, it sounds like by the end of the year they'll be done with that project. So that was the $16,000 grant that we got, so that project is underway. We found a development conference that's in Austin, Texas, starts Sunday. Kim and Missy are going to go to that. They'll be leaving Saturday and returning Wednesday. It's a development conference, so it's right exactly what they need. One of the conditions in sending them to that is they're gonna come back and give you a report on the sessions, telling you what they learned in each of those sessions. It's largely GIS stuff, so the education that they're gonna get, it's my intention then going forward, we will not have to pay Geocom $16,000 to update stuff. They can do it. We've had a voluntary address change that we've got two addressing things that we've been working on. One of them is a voluntary address change.
Have a gentleman who lives off of Hawthorne Drive, private drive off of 210th. He bought a 20-acre parcel that abuts 198th, which is a paved road south of Pella. He has built his own private drive for whatever reason to 198th, called and requested we change his address to 198th instead of Hawthorne Drive. I did a lot of checking. I talked with Pella, talked with Laura, talked to Blake at the state to see if there's anything. At first, I had some concerns. Why, never in all this 15 years that I guess we just voluntarily say, yep, we're going to change. So I talked to Blake, talked with Ed Bull. There's really nothing to prevent us from doing it if, address is allowed. What did happen, the gentleman bought this 20-acre parcel. It had a vacant house on it. Then his driveway, he's going to make one more split. So we basically had to change the vacant house. There's only three addresses left in there, so we had to change the vacant house to allow for that house, his driveway, and in the next lot. But that's been done. I've notified everyone that's been done. The markers have been changed. He did pay for the new marker for the new address.
So that one's underway. That one pretty much will be, in fact, the new signs have gone up,
I believe.
The other one, we were notified by a homeowner that he believed his address was wrong. And when we investigated it, sure enough, we found out that his address was not right. It's that was outside of the MSAG range. It's just an overall bad situation, but it was just an error. It was just a mistake that was made that we are now working on ways to correct it. And what it's probably gonna come down to is we're going to end up changing the name of a street in
South Shore
Heights that is essentially one block long. So it's not a huge road that runs, it doesn't run very far at all. In fact, we've been there on a fire.
It's more like a curve.
Yeah, it's more or less a curve and in a road, but we've been there on a fire. But the gentleman stated when he called that he has to plead with the 911 operators when he calls because the map
takes him
to Lakeside Heights or Lake, the other one off of 180th.
Yes. And he's in South Shore.
So they're about 4 miles as a crow flies apart. His address is 201
High Ridge.
And we have a range 4 miles to the east that runs just above that. So it's completely backwards of the way it should be. So we're working on potential fixes. We've communicated to him what we're doing, that we're aware of it and we're working on it. We're just taking a good hard look at it so we don't make another mistake and then end up going back and having to have him change his address yet again. So.
Excuse me, but I want to flag this in my CAD system.
Yep.
So what's the address now?
201 High Ridge Drive.
And that's incorrect?
That's incorrect. It's in South Shore.
And you probably won't find it because it's out of the MSAG range.
If you Google it,
it takes you
to Lakeside.
And Lakeside, the range is in the 180s to 160s to 180s, I believe.
Okay. Let me see, that other guy didn't change his drive into on 190?
Yes.
So he comes in his driveway up 190.
Yes.
Okay.
And we took the other marker down so that there wasn't confusion. It can't be used in both.
Yeah.
So 201 High Ridge is in South Shore.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I can put that into my CAD system even though it's not in the MSAG.
That's totally fine. Do you
remember? The house has been there since the early 2000s.
Block was his last name.
Stephen?
I know we were there 2 or 3 years ago on a grass fire, and I remember at the time that it didn't seem right where we were going, but it never occurred to me that it was a bad address.
Is that back in that cul-de-sac then?
Mm-hmm. Clear back in the kind of the southeast corner.
Yeah, he's the only house there. It's kind of that cabin right now.
So we went out and actually drove both of them to make sure that there wasn't a mapping error. The signs all match. It was indeed what we thought it was. It was indeed a mistake. The signs all match. We looked at other ways to not change the name of that street, but yet address his house different. And that didn't present any good options either. So.
And he's actually in favor of an address change. When I talked to him, he said that's what you need to do and do it.
So.
He's just tired of people not being able to find his house.
So he's cooperating willingly and we're communicating with him. We're down to pretty much agreeing that we need to change the name of that stretch of road. But now we're looking at what are we going to call it so that we're not redundant or creating further confusion.
I think the other problem we're faced with on that is the old subdivisions. Like new subdivisions now face or follow the grid that we have in the county, the streets and the numbers have to line up. These old subdivisions are 3-digit numbers, like we have Valley View or it should be High Ridge. You know, they don't follow any kind of grid, so that's the other kind of dilemma that.
So it's one of those things where we've got to make a decision on at what point do we change all of this. So we're taking a comprehensive look at it, and we'll let everybody know when we make those changes.
I'm glad these people are working with you.
But that brings up the point, 2 points actually. If you or your responders are out there and question an address, don't be afraid to mark it, you know, write it down and send us an email or call us and have us just double check on stuff.
If you see them that don't show up in Beacon or whatever,
The other issue was we had a complaint that, and it was from Elk Rock State Park, that when people put in the address of 888 Highway 14 into their GPS or Google, it takes them to the 800 block of Lincoln Street in Knoxville. What we've been able to pinpoint is that because the Corps owns all of that, that's federal property, those don't show up in Beacon. So the property records that are public on the internet, there's no reference to anything in the 800. There's one house in the 800 block of Highway 14 out in the county. But we know we have the boat ramp there because it's addressed, but there's this issue. So that complaint got us to the point where we realized that, well, that's probably because there's no property records that are public on the internet. There's no reference to that being core ground. So we're trying to work through that so that when people put in an address like that into their GPS or Google it, it actually takes them where they need to be. So. And map requests?
I don't know, we're setting a standard, I guess I'm not sure what. I had a request from Indiana Township. I mean, the map they had was old. I've worked with Mike and kind of got what he's wanting. Unfortunately, he's in the field tonight, so he can be here. I need to try and send him a smaller version to say, yeah, that's so. I don't know where you want to set.
The biggest issue we have is that if we end up with 12 departments requesting basically customized maps, we're going to end up with a tremendous amount of time and effort into it. To a degree, I think the board needs to determine how much customization staff does to a map.
Does he want something special?
Yeah, what was he wanting?
Wanted like the road names in different locations.
That I didn't change, really don't have that ability. I mean, the difference is from the map he had was a 2006 back when Lynn did them in CAD. Well, CAD is more of a drawing program where GIS, that's moving the live data. It's a little more tedious, I found. You look at a map and think, wow, that doesn't look bad. Oh, well, it's kind of like, but I think we've kind of come to, and he wanted like Attica and Pershing, I guess, blown up like those are, but shut off in the big map because otherwise the big blob of numbers blended. Not a big deal.
You don't have why I'm responding on there?
I believe so.
I know Bill brought that up of digital mapping. I said, I don't know that all these small departments have the ability or capability to do.
We don't hardly use our maps at all anymore with this I'm responding. I mean, that makes it pretty
easy. So that's something for, I guess.
It was just a concern that surfaced. It was like, well, what is the board going to think if we end up with 6 hours of staff time in customizing a map for one department? And then what happens when the next department walks in? You know, where do you want us to be? You know, that's, I guess, what was driving this being on the agenda.
What are you, excuse my stupidity, but what are you using with I am responding?
What's that?
What are you using with I am responding? It gives you a map or what?
Yeah.
When you hit respond, if you're like responding to the call, you can hit, what's the button say, locate?
Yes.
Is that on a
location, and you hit the button and it takes the GPS from your phone of where you're at right now and draws you a blue line on a map how to get to the incident.
Is Home Fire that?
Yeah.
Yeah. As well, theirs wouldn't work though because they're not getting the CAD feed. Ours works from county as long as we get a good address. We had one.
Okay.
I remember one we went to help Columbia on something, and I think you were given a intersection by the caller, so we didn't have a specific address. And so when that was entered in and spit out to I Am Responding, we got a list of, say, six addresses, and you just had to pick one. Oh, I want the one near Columbia. And once you picked on it, then it took you there.
But the problem is, I'm sure not all responders are carrying smartphones. It would be part of the issue with...
But to your point, when you get that CAD where that data is pushed out to I Am Responding, that will work for them.
Makes it nice going down the road. They give you directions just through there.
Just like, is it just like a map quest then, basically? It's just giving you directions, a little person speaking to you?
Yep. Works good. I would say 95%, I mean, the number of times that it hasn't worked because of the address not coming up in the map is maybe 1 out of 10. I mean, it almost always works.
And most of them are already pushing to see where it's at, and if it's not, going to look at the map to where it goes.
Good. That's great. Good for you.
That's all I have.